Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is April reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Saturday, September 12, 2020. Price at the pump. Odessa, Midland, at top of list for gas price declines. By Stuart Doreen. S. Doreen at HearstMP.com. Two of the largest price drops for gas in Texas this week could be found in Odessa and Midland. AAA Texas reported this week that there was 9-cent decrease week over week in Odessa and a 6-cent decrease in Midland. The only other larger metropolitan area in the state with a drop of 6 cents or more was Sherman-Denison, 9 cents. The average decline across the state was 2 cents. The organization also reports Odessa and Midland are still the most expensive larger metros to buy gasoline. The average in Odessa is $2.04, and the average in Midland is $2. They are the only two metropolitan areas with an average at $1.95 or above. Texarkana is third at $1.94. The state average is $1.89. Distributors have told the Reporter-Telegram there are many complexities in the fuel business that impact pricing. They pointed to the high cost of transportation from Gulf Coast refineries and Midland's distance from pipelines. AAA Texas also reported this week that the summer driving season, which is unofficially Memorial Day through Labor Day, gave drivers in Texas the cheapest fuel prices since 2004. AAA Texas noted that the Texas summer average for 2020 was $1.84 per gallon of regular unleaded. Demand was decimated this summer by the impact of COVID-19, which ultimately meant increased supply and cheaper gas prices. AAA Texas reported, pump prices could continue to trend cheaper as winter blend gasoline is reintroduced into the market as early as next week. Across the region, other averages reported included $1.84 in both Amarillo and Lubbock, a decrease of 2 cents in both communities, $1.87 in San Angelo, a decrease of 1 cent, $1.87 in Abilene, a decrease of 5 cents, and $1.90 in El Paso, a decrease of 4 cents. The average price in Midland is 50 cents lower than it was 1 year ago. The average price across the state is 38 cents lower. The lowest average in the state is $1.76 in Sherman-Denison. This week, Odessa, $2.04. Midland, $2. Texarkana, $1.94. Bryan College Station, $1.93. Corpus Christi, $1.93. State average, $1.89. National average, $2.21. Last week, Odessa, $2.13. Midland, $2.06. Texarkana, $1.96. Dallas, $1.95. Fort Worth, Arlington, $1.95. State average, $1.91. National average, $2.23. Source, AAA Texas. Solemn 9/11 Ceremony. Above, Midland Police Officer Chain Blandford and Midland Fire Chief Charles Blumenauer place a wreath Friday at the flagpole outside Lee High School during the Patriot Day ceremonies honoring Americans who died September 11, 2001. Right, members of Lee and Midland High joined AFJROTC, raised the flag to half-staff during the ceremony. Photos by Tim Fisher, Reporter-Telegram. Commemorating 9/11 Tragedy. Photos by Tim Fisher, Reporter-Telegram. Members of Lee and Midland High joined AFJROTC, raised the flag to half-staff Friday outside Lee High School during the Patriot Day ceremonies honoring Americans who died September 11, 2001. Below, Lee High's Braxton Leak plays taps during the ceremony. Energy. Oil leader. Hard to see $50 oil for 2 years. Oil prices end week below $40. By Mella McEwen. M. McEwen at MRT.com. Oil prices remained below the $40 level, but eked out a small gain during a holiday-shortened week. Traders came back from the Labor Day holiday and sent crude prices down $3 a barrel, or 7%, amid a shaky outlook for oil demand. West Texas Intermediate on the New York Mercantile Exchange added 3 cents Friday to close at $37.33 a barrel, up from $36.76 at Tuesday's close. Prices managed to maintain some of Wednesday's $1.29 jump, losing just 75 cents Thursday. The posted price ended the week at $33.75 a barrel. Natural gas prices also fell victim to Tuesday's price drop, sinking 19 cents to $2.40 per MCF, and lost another 14 cents as the week drew to a close. Prices lost 5 cents Friday to close at $2.27 per MCF. It's hard for me to see oil prices getting out of the 40s for about 2 years, David Bledsoe, president of Henry Resources, told the Reporter Telegram by email. When the world has 8 million barrels, mainly from OPEC, off the market, it seems impossible for oil prices to improve until demand recovers and all of the excess capacity is taken. Bledsoe said any recent strength in natural gas prices was little noticed by his company. He explained that gas revenues make such a small part of the company's revenues, and most of Henry's gas is sold at Waha pricing of $1.50 per MCF, rather than Henry Hub pricing of $2.50 per MCF. Additionally, he said, most of the revenues from the company's gas stream comes from natural gas liquids, which are ratioed to oil prices. Leslie Bayer, president of the Petroleum Equipment and Services Association, told the Reporter Telegram by email that oil price stabilization is a positive sign of economic recovery. It means people are returning to work and helps companies restart production to fuel that recovery. It's also important to acknowledge the uncertainty underlying the economic recovery as we work toward containing the pandemic, but demand for the safe and efficient production of oil and gas will definitely return. While futures in New York edged up on Friday, tracking a move higher in U.S. equities, prices are still set for a nearly 7% decline this week, Bloomberg reported, saying traders have been turning their attention to data showing the United Arab Emirates, since July, has been regularly exceeding its quota under a deal between the Organization of Petroleum Exporting Countries and its allies. The uncertainty over how much supply OPEC Plus is returning to the market adds another wrench in the recovery for oil prices still reeling from the pandemic-driven blow to consumption, Bloomberg said. While U.S. supplies had grown tighter in past months and producers were expected to restrain production amid a weak financial backdrop, stockpiles rose again last week for the first time since mid-July. A retreat in global equities has also weighed on energy markets. Meanwhile, Bloomberg reported the physical market for actual barrels of crude is showing some signs of strength. This week, WTI Midland crude's premium over NYMEX oil futures touched its highest level since mid-July, and the premium for heavy Louisiana sweet crude is at its strongest in over a week. Energy. Rig count decline continues in Permian State. 3 rigs added in Midland County, according to Baker Hughes. By Mela McEwen. mmcewen at mrt.com. The nation's rig count resumed its downward trend last week, according to Baker Hughes' weekly rig count. Baker Hughes said the U.S. rig count dipped 2 to 254, 622 rigs below the 860 at work in the country at this time a year ago. The count remains above the record low of 244 recorded earlier this year by the oil field services firm, which has tallied the rig count since the 1940s. There were 180 rigs drilling for oil, down 1, and 71 drilling for natural gas, also down 1. Texas lost 1 rig to 105 and is 325 rigs below the 430 at work statewide last year. New Mexico also lost 1 rig to 46. The only producing state to show a gain was Oklahoma, which rose 1 rig to 12. The Permian Basin, home to about half the nation's rigs, dropped 1 rig to 124. A year ago, there were 419 rigs at work, 295 higher. Eddy County, New Mexico, remains the most active county in the Permian Basin with 25 rigs, down 1 for the week. Lee County, New Mexico, was second with 21, unchanged for the week. Martin County reported 19 rigs, down 2 for the week. Midland County showed the sharpest rise for the week, adding 3 rigs for 15 at work within county lines. Loving County reported 10 rigs, unchanged for the week. Crockett County and Yoakum County each saw the 1 rig within their county cease work during the week. Names and Faces. Out and About by Julie Donnelly. Junior League members gather for social. The Junior League of Midland kick-offed its fundraising year recently with kickoff social at the headquarters parking lot. Members had two options to attend. For the first hour, they could drive through and grab a popsicle or ice cream sandwich, wave and say a quick hello to their fellow members, then head out without ever having to get out of their vehicles. The other option was to tailgate in the parking lot. Members choosing this option gathered under shade tents in a social distancing fashion and enjoyed ice cream and popsicles and charcuterie boxes made by league member Mandy McCabe. The kickoff was also time for members to support one of their placements, Pink Pantry, by dropping off donations of feminine hygiene supplies that are then made available to students at Midland ISD's junior high, freshman, and high schools. Donations also were taken for the rummage sale, which will be held virtually this year starting in November. Wagner Noel Performing Arts Center gets ready to reopen for live events by J.C. Lewis. jc.lewis@hurstmp.com. Zuno employees sanitize at the Wagner Noel Performing Arts Center on Thursday. The Wagner Noel Performing Arts Center will open its doors again for events next week. Since mid-March, the Performing Arts Center has postponed events due to the coronavirus pandemic. WNPAC General Manager Stephanie Rivas said the venue has three events scheduled for the month of September. "Then, of course, we will continue to have events each month following," she said. "Things will look a little bit different, as they already do, but slow and steady, we will all get where we need to be." Patrons 10 years old and older will be required to wear a face mask at all times. Masks may only be removed while eating and drinking at designated seats. Patrons will be asked to stay 6 feet apart at security checkpoints, restrooms, merchandise, and concession stands. Use of the iconic reusable Wagner Noel cups will be temporarily suspended. Zuno, a company which specializes in antimicrobial protection, spent Thursday sanitizing the venue and academic spaces at the Wagner Noel Performing Arts Center. The areas were sprayed with a 30-day germ-fighting shield on all hard and soft surfaces, Rivas said. The WNPAC staff will continue to maintain the shield throughout the year. Michael Hatfield, a Zuno partner, is originally from Odessa but is based out of San Antonio now. "The compound is Zuno Z71, which is a microbial protectant," he said. "How we spray is through electric static. The liquid being sprayed has a positive charge, and it wraps around everything negative. So wood, and basically everything, is a negative charge. It takes about 10 minutes to completely dry, and it's going to last for 30 days. Hatfield said the compound is completely safe. He also administers swabs on surfaces to show the customer that everything has been coated and there are no viruses or bacteria. His company employs veterans, and they help veterans get PTSD service dogs through Operation Battle Buddy. University of Texas Permian Basin President Sandra Woodley said, "The university is excited to have facilities open for students that are back on campus. We know that this is a gift to the community and music students that study out here," she said. "We're really happy to have it coming back on. We are excited for the venue to get started and appreciate the thoughtfulness and care that has gone into planning for making sure our community is safe." City: 2 more COVID deaths, 10 new cases Friday. From staff reports. The City of Midland reported another 2 coronavirus-related deaths Friday. The 2 deaths, both female patients in their 80s, bring the total number of deaths to 4 this week, and to 79 total during the pandemic. There were 5 deaths last week and 6 from August 30 through September 5. The patients, both Midland County residents, were being treated in Dallas. One was being treated in a hospital. She died Thursday. The other was being treated in a nursing home. She died Friday. Both were reported to have had underlying health conditions. The Midland Health Department reported there were 10 new cases reported Friday. That means the week ended with 79 cases, which was 44 less than last week, and the first sub-100 week since early June. The Health Department also reported 1,219 active cases, 4 less than Thursday, and 1,970 recovered, 11 more. Coronavirus report: cases Tuesday, 47, cases Wednesday, 12, cases Thursday, 10, cases Friday, 10, Cases this week, 79. Total cases this week, 123. Total cases last week, 157.
Hi, this is Linda. I'm reading the Odessa American for Saturday, September 12th, 2020. Section A. I-20 getting 6 lanes from 2025 to 30. MPO highlights highway plans. By Bob Campbell. The Texas Transportation Commission has okayed the Permian Basin Metropolitan Planning Organization's MPO 10-year plan, including the $340.2 million widening of I-20 from 4 to 6 lanes over 18 miles from east of JBS Parkway in Odessa to east of Texas 349 Rankin Highway in Midland between 2025 and 2030. The I-20 project is funded and will happen, says PBMPO Executive Director Cameron Walker, while state and federal backing is hoped for in a host of other ambitious tasks. Financed by the Federal Highway Administration and Federal Transit Administration through the Texas Department of Transportation, TxDOT, Walker said the MPO has committed $18.3 million for I-20 and TxDOT $321.9 million. Other important projects financially supported by the MPO, but only partially funded in fiscal 2021, are the widening of I-20 from west of FM 1936 to JBS Parkway here, and from 349 to FM 1208 near the Martin County line, and an upgrade to freeway section on Northeast Loop 338 from US 385 to East Yukon Road in Odessa. Walker said new interchanges at Loop 250 and Todd Road in Midland and East Loop 338 and 52nd through 56th Streets here will probably go forward in 2022. More work scheduled for construction from 2021 to 24 are new interchanges at US 385 and South Loop 338 and on Yukon at the East Loop and Highway 191 in Odessa, he said. Midland's I-20 Midkiff interchange will be rebuilt. Ramp work will continue at Highway 158 and Loop 250 in Midland, and the traffic signals will be upgraded at Yukon and the West Loop in Odessa, Walker said, adding that the Odessa and Midland Development Corporations are contributing $8 million and $6 million, respectively, toward the overall Unified Transportation Program. The UTP is a listing of projects and programs that are planned to be developed or constructed within the first 10 years of the 24-year state long-range transportation plan, Walker said. Project development includes activities such as preliminary engineering work, environmental analysis, right-of-way acquisition, and design. Midland attorney and City Councilman Jack Ladd Jr. is vice chair of the PBMPO board, which also includes Ector County Judge Debbie Hayes as chair, Midland County Commissioner Robin Donnelly, Odessa City Councilman Tom Sprawls, Martin County Judge Brian Cox of Stanton, TxDOT District Engineer John Speed, and Easy Rider General Manager Doug Provance. The group ordinarily meets at its headquarters at 9601 Wright Drive in the Midland International Air and Spaceport Complex, although the pandemic has forced it to convene by Zoom during the 7 months Ladd has been on the panel. This plan is way past due, and I'm very glad we have it, Ladd said. It took a lot of hard work by people in Midland and Odessa, and I'm thrilled that we have received the funding to widen I-20. It was desperately needed, and it shows what we can accomplish when we work together. This massive undertaking, which will benefit our two communities for a generation, was the result of very smart leveraging of local funds to get state and federal funding. Asked if highway money is hard to come by in West Texas, he said, "We have a greater challenge than Houston and the large metro areas, but we have better leadership. That's why we get what we get." Judge Hayes makes it a team atmosphere where everyone is welcome to express our ideas. Ladd said the help of Walker and Midland-Odessa Transportation Alliance President James Beecham was also indispensable. The PBMPO is responsible for parts of Martin, Midland, and Ector counties, and the cities of Odessa and Midland. Odessa City Council District 1 information. Appointed council member running by Michael Merlo. Current District 1 Councilman Michael K. Shelton, Sr., 63, said that he wants to run for the seat because he wants to make a difference for the district. "Being on City Council, we come together to work together to make the city much better," Shelton said in a phone interview. Shelton was appointed to the seat after Malcolm Hamilton abruptly resigned from the position earlier in the year, and said that he brings his experience as a pastor and someone who works with the young and old people in the community. He said that he hopes to be approachable in his community, detailing that he has helped people get trash removed from alleys in the district, has helped elderly folks get their mailboxes moved closer to their homes, and that he has volunteered at Christ Church in Odessa, handing out food boxes. About 3 years ago, Shelton said he was called to pastor at Pilgrim Rest Baptist Church in Odessa. He has lived in District 1 since, he said. He is also a member of the Southside Ministerial Alliance, the Odessa Ministerial Alliance, and the Non-Denominational Ministerial Alliance in Midland. Shelton said that people living in his district have told him that they want a neighborhood watch and more lighting. "So those are my concerns right now, to see if I can get a neighborhood watch and see if I can get some more lighting in certain streets to make the neighborhood safer," he said. Shelton spoke about more development from Interstate 20 down to Grant Street. "We want to see about getting some new development, putting in some new stores and new businesses to come in there and make it more beautiful. So when you come off I-20, he said. Shelton said that he appreciates money being spent downtown. "We need to bring more businesses downtown. They already have a plan for downtown. ODC and the Odessa people are working to make downtown more beautiful." Shelton said he's passionate about the city. "I'm passionate about our seniors and our children and trying to educate our people, not just in District 1, but everywhere. We need to educate our people, keep our people aware of what's going on in our districts." He also said that he wouldn't be opposed to moving City Council work sessions to a more accessible time other than the current 10 a.m. sessions. He declined to comment on term limits, ODC spending money on oil and gas, and tax, sewer, and water rates, but said that he would speak on them at another time. During a City Council meeting regarding a City of Odessa mask mandate earlier in the year, before a state mandate was issued, Shelton voted the mandate down because he said the city could not enforce it. He also spoke on the local law enforcement during the interview. "Our police department, plus our police chief, Gerke, is doing a wonderful job keeping our city safe. I commend them on a wonderful job on trying to keep our neighborhoods safe, trying to handle the situations as they come, trying to handle them in a way that everybody can be peaceful," he said, adding that every time there has been a protest, it has been peaceful. Shelton said that he's been busy since he's inherited the responsibility of District 1. "I'm learning day by day how to be a good, responsible city councilman," he said, adding that he's proud of the city assistance task force he's been a part of, as well as being able to help small business in need. Shelton said that council has done a good job coming together to discuss issues. Everyone has an opinion, but we leave with a common understanding, knowing that we can all work together and make the city of Odessa a better place. He said that city council can improve by having more town hall meetings, community outreach, and to work to inform the public more on issues. The community has to be informed on what's going on and what our mayor and city council is doing for the city. The Odessa American publishes profiles on all opposed candidates running for local elected positions. As part of the profiles, the OA looks into the backgrounds of candidates. Back the Blue Pledge. State Representative Brooks Landgraf, Republican Odessa, joined Governor Greg Abbott in signing the Texas Backs the Blue Pledge to oppose efforts to defund Texas police departments. Abbott is calling on all Texans to sign the pledge against defunding police departments. The men and women who risk everything to protect and serve deserve our respect and gratitude, Landgraf said. It is without hesitation that I pledge to oppose any attempt to defund law enforcement in Texas. If adequate resources are not provided to enforce the rule of law in Texas, not only will people's lives be in danger, but the government will have failed to fulfill one of its most basic responsibilities, Landgraf said. I'm thankful for Governor Abbott's leadership on this important issue, he added. Local news roundup. Odessa teenager in critical condition after collision. An Odessa teenager is in critical condition as of Friday morning after he was involved in a two-vehicle collision in southeast Odessa. The collision reportedly happened at 4:43 p.m. Thursday near the intersection of I-20 and Grandview, an Odessa Police Department press release stated. Investigation reportedly showed that 50-year-old Israel Cadena of Odessa was driving an 18-wheeler that was stopped facing west in the 1700 block of East I-20. Cesar Torcero, 19, of Odessa, was driving a gray Ford F-150 west in the 1700 block of East I-20, directly behind the 18-wheeler. The press release stated. The F-150 failed to control speed and collided into the back of the 18-wheeler. Torcero was reportedly transported to a local hospital with life-threatening injuries. There were no reports of any other injuries, and the investigation continues. Midland woman dies in two-vehicle collision. A 72-year-old Midland woman died after she was involved in a two-vehicle collision south of Odessa. The reported fatal collision happened at 4:19 p.m. Thursday on Loop 338, 3 miles south of Odessa, a Texas Department of Public Safety press release stated. Rodolfo Ronquillo, 18, of Odessa, was reportedly driving a 2002 GMC Sierra West on Loop 338, while Rogelio Enriquez Rodriguez, 66, of Odessa, was driving a 1995 GMC Sierra East on Loop 338 with his passenger, 72-year-old Trinidad Gonzalez of Midland. The 2002 Sierra entered the eastbound lane and attempted to pass when unsafe and collided with the 1995 Sierra, the press release stated. Ronquillo and Enriquez Rodriguez were each transported to Medical Center Hospital. Gonzalez was pronounced dead at the scene. All three people involved in the fatal collision were wearing their seatbelts. Hector Super, School Tops on Talpas. By Ruth Campbell. Hector College Prep Success Academy has surpassed its target scores on the TELPUS test, the state exam given to English learners and bilingual students. Information from Ector College Prep Success Superintendent CEO Robert Bleich shows 44% of students at Ector passed the Texas English Language Proficiency Assessment System, TELPAS, and did better than it has in its history. Crockett Middle School's passing rate was 26%, Bowie was 25%, Wilson and Young 21%, Bonham 14%, and Nimitz 6%. At Midland ISD, San Jacinto Junior High had a 34% passing rate, Abel Junior High had a 32% passing rate, and Alamo had 0%. Our district target was 36%, and we superseded that. I think the year before that the best year Ector had had was 18%, Bleich said. He said English language learners who take the test represent about 40% of Ector's students. He added that is extremely significant because the way the State of Texas Assessment of Academic Readiness, STAR, test is calculated, if students do well on the TELPAS, it is going to have a significant impact on a school's scores. We really targeted this group of kids during the school year and went through a series of interventions that were very much targeted to the way they were going to be assessed. So the entire year, the kids were being provided support, Bleich said. The week before the test, he said they basically closed the campus. Any kids who were not being tested did not come to school, so only the 500 TELPAS students came. Prior to doing that, we had met with the parents. We had an amazing parent meeting, standing room only, an auditorium full of parents, and we really challenged the parents to make sure their kids came to school, Bleich said. He said they explained to the parents how important this was, and the parents supported the school. During that week, Bleich said they spent 2 days working 6 to 8 hours a day providing intensive reviews, pumping the students up, and preparing them for the test. Every single student showed up during this week of testing, even though many thought that if other kids on campus weren't coming, then the TELPAS students wouldn't come. But our attendance was through the roof, Bleich said. Executive Director of Bilingual ESL Education said, with all the changes made last year, we have seen the majority of our campuses made growth in the domains of listening and speaking, especially on the TELPAS. So yes, we did see improvement for 2020 across the board. Students were tested in listening, speaking, reading, and writing, and scored at beginning, intermediate, advanced, and advanced high. We're very proud of all the campus's accomplishments or achievements and the scores that we're getting on TELPAS. It's wonderful to see that our English learners are making those gains, especially when it comes to their English language proficiency, and it's always good to see campuses that make all those extra efforts. And we see that success for our students, Salcido said. When we see our teachers embedding those listening and speaking skills into their lesson plans, that awareness is higher. And then also whenever our students become more familiar with the assessment format and also with the performance expectations, that is also helpful. So whenever a campus gives the learners that opportunity, it always makes a difference, she added. She noted that learning environments are different this year because of COVID-19, but it's a collective effort. Everybody's working really hard to make sure that whether they're in a virtual environment or face-to-face, that our students have a very strong learning experience, Salcido said. This year, Ector started September 9th because of the pandemic. This is an incredible challenge we're facing with some students not even showing up face-to-face, Bleich said. We think somewhere between 30 and 40% are not even going to come to school. The ones coming to school are coming a couple days a week in a hybrid program, Bleich added. We're going to continue with an extended school day, and we're going to provide a ton of tutoring for students. We have a team of tutors that now have been with us for a couple of years, and we're going to monitor students' daily work. We're going to continue giving weekly formative assessments. We're going to run the data. Any student who does not perform well whether they come to school one day a week, 2 days a week, or whether they stay home every day. Any student who does not do well, we're going to appeal to the parents and encourage parents to let them come to school the following week for a couple of weeks to get intensive support before they start to fall behind. Those are going to be long days for kids. We're looking at them going from 8:20 to 6:30, Bleich said. He said there have been a few studies conducted about how students do with remote learning, especially for poor and minority students. He said there's an incredible slide that takes place, so we're going to do what we can to make sure that doesn't happen. We feel pretty confident that our kids are going to have the internet. We're spending a lot of money to make sure kids have the technology. The district has done a very good job of assisting families who don't have internet service, so there are hotspots we're buying. We bought an extra 500 Chromebooks this year and 200 iPads. We already have 800 Chromebooks for a couple of years ago, Bleich said. Students will have devices at home and in the classroom because middle school students sometimes forget things like textbooks and computers. We want to be prepared for our students, so I'm not too worried about that. I'm concerned that we have working parents and we have first-generation college-bound kids. I know the challenges if parents have more than one child, they get overwhelmed, and the students may not be monitored beyond the question of whether they did their work in some cases. Bleich said Ector plans to hire an extra 40 tutors to intensively monitor students. Although state accountability won't count this year, Bleich wants to show how well the school has performed despite the challenges it faces. Ector College Prep, formerly called Ector Middle School, partnered with Bleich's Ector Success Academy Network as a way to stay sanctions from the Texas Education Agency for 2 years. Senate Bill 1882, signed into effect by the Texas legislature in 2017, provides incentives for districts to contract to partner with an open enrollment charter school, institutions of higher education, nonprofits, or government entities, the Texas Education Agency website says. This is coming up on 2 years. We feel we've delivered on the promises, so when the time is to decide on our school, they'll decide in our favor, he said. DPS adds Saturday appointments for September. The Texas Department of Public Safety issued a press release Friday morning that the Midland Mega Center will add appointments for Saturdays in September. The Midland Mega Center will reportedly be open from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. September 19th and September 26th. Services are by appointment only for customers needing to renew or replace a license only, the press release stated. DPS has reportedly added additional Saturday appointment availability at select driver license offices for customers needing to renew or replace their Texas driver's license or identification cards. Participating driver's license offices will offer a limited number of appointments to help Texans handle these specific transactions. Nearly 700,000 Texas driver's license and identification cards have expired while driver's license offices were closed due to the COVID-19 pandemic, the press release stated. DPS also anticipates adding more Saturday appointments in the coming months. Your response matters. The 2020 census counts every person living in the United States and 5 U.S. territories. In mid-March, homes across the country began receiving invitations to complete the 2020 census. Once the invitation arrives, you should respond for your home in one of 3 ways: online, by phone, or by mail. When you respond to the census, you'll tell the Census Bureau where you live as of April 1st. Your responses inform where over $675 billion is distributed each year to communities nationwide for clinics, schools, roads, and more. Census data gives community leaders vital information to make decisions about building community centers, opening businesses, and planning for the future. Responding also fulfills your civic duty because it's mandated by the U.S. Constitution. The United States has counted its population every 10 years since 1790. To respond or for more information, call 844-330-2020 or visit 2020census.gov.
Hi, this is Jack. I'm reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Sunday, September 13th, 2020. Section A. COVID-19. Weekly coronavirus cases fall under 100. By Stuart Doreen, S-D-O-R-E-E-N, at HearstNP.com. Midland County ended the week with less than 100 coronavirus cases for the first time since mid-June. The 79 cases reported by the Midland Health Department were the fewest going back to June 7th through the 13th, according to reporter telegrams, and continue a downward trend more than a month in the making. Since August 2nd through 8th, when the Health Department reported 414 cases, there have been five straight weeks of week-over-week declines. The Health Department has reported less than 200 cases during the last 4 weeks, and this week was the first week with less than 100. Consider that 79 cases are an 81% drop since August 2nd through 8th, or the average total of cases stretched over 7 days was just more than 11 cases a day. It also appears to be a regional trend, according to the Department of State Health Services. Midland's 79 case total is consistent with what is happening in other larger population communities in West Texas. Midland Health Service officials also stated this past week that the number of new cases is not only the decline, but so is the number of people testing positive. That percentage has been as high as 30 earlier in the summer. On August 4th, MISD Superintendent Orlando Riddick said a 21% positive test rate was a reason for the district to implement at-home learning to start the 2021 school year. This past week, MMH CEO Russell Myers reported the number of people testing positive during Midland Health testing had been below 10% for two straight weeks. He also said that more than 400 people had been tested each week, and those people exhibited symptoms or had been determined to have been exposed to someone who tested positive for coronavirus. The decline in new cases is something that community leaders have said was possible, especially if Midland County residents wear masks, practice social distancing, and avoid any large gatherings. During the past month, schools across the city have started, and Midland ISD in particular has started its return to some on-campus learning. Health leaders have stated the rest of September is significant in terms of cases reported because of the Labor Day holiday and the increased number of cases that have happened over the holidays during the pandemic. The Health Department also reported as of Friday 1,219 active cases and 1,970 recovered. During the pandemic, there have been 3,441 total cases. The number of coronavirus-related deaths reported this week were two less than last week and the fewest since going back to August 9th, according to Reporter Telegram records. During the pandemic, there have been 77 coronavirus-related deaths. Development. Motran. Basin seen as place for infrastructure dollars. $25 million for I-20 interchange was the third straight year for a Permian Basin project to be funded. By Stuart Doreen, S-D-O-R-E-E-N at HearstNP.com. The $25 million in federal funding announced for an Interstate 20 interchange in Midland County will help leverage hundreds of millions in existing state and local investment for the rebuild of I-20. That is what Midland-Odessa Transportation Alliance President James Beauchamp said this past week after the U.S. Department of Transportation awarded $25 million toward an Interstate 20 energy sector safety project, an overpass at the intersection of Cotton Flat Road and Interstate 20. The funding is awarded through the U.S. Department of Transportation's Better Utilizing Investments to Leverage Development, the BUILD grant program. Motran also reported that the I-20 Cotton Flat Exchange was the third project in 3 years in the Permian Basin that has been awarded such funding, the first two being an overpass project in Winkler County at the intersection of State Highway 302 and State Highway 115, and an overpass project in Glasscock County at the intersection of State Highway 137 and Highway 158. Also, the Texas Transportation Committee approved more than $600 million more funding for improvements in the Unified Transportation Program for the Permian Basin in 2019. That amount included more than $240 million for I-20 improvements. In April, officials with the Odessa District of the Texas Department of Transportation explained their I-20 projects that cover a decade and require more than $830 million in funding. Project highlights include interstate expansion to three lanes each way, having one-way frontage roads, improving locations for entrance and exit ramps, new interchanges and underpasses converted to overpasses at eight locations. At that time, funding had reached around $433 million. Odessa District Engineer John Speed told the Reporter-Telegram the extra lanes and improved circulation of traffic will be a benefit as volumes at peak locations in Midland reach 70,000 vehicles per day. About a quarter are heavy trucks. Interstate 20 plays a tremendous role in freight movement in the region for the energy sector and is a critical connection between Midland and Odessa. Beauchamp last week said PSP officials thanked elected officials from Midland and Odessa, including State Rep Tom Craddock, Midland Mayor Patrick Payton, Councilwoman Lori Belong, Councilman Jack Ladd, and Midland County Commissioner Robin Donnelly, for lending their voices to the effort to contact federal officials about the need in the Permian Basin. Beauchamp also included letters from officials sent directly to the Transportation Secretary Elaine Chao. Inside many of those letters, it was mentioned that Midland-Odessa was the number five top-producing MSA for GDP in Texas in 2018, and that Midland, Ector, and Reeves counties all rank in the top 25 in Texas for GDP levels. In fact, Reeves County, which ranks 21st, produced more GDP than Lubbock. That means that Reeves County, with a population of less than 16,000, outproduces Lubbock, a county with over 310,000 in population, and serves as the seat of one of the top four university systems in Texas. Another reason listed for the need for more funding in letters was that the Permian Basin accounts for 10% of Texas's economy and 30% of all national oil and gas production. The latest industry projections show growth in the area doubling by 2023 and yielding 60% of net global output in this time frame. Completion of the projects is TxDOT's application, clearly critical to ensure Texas can continue to keep up with demand and efficiently provide energy resources to all Americans. Energy. Evans. The future has never been brighter. PSP report details region's state, U.S., and global impact. By Mella McEwen, MMCEWEN at MRT.com. For all the riches the Permian Basin's oil and natural gas resources has generated since the first discovery in Mitchell County 100 years ago, there's more to come. Last week, the Permian Strategic Partnership issued a report quantifying those opportunities, finding that the Permian contains more than 92 billion barrels of oil in proven reserves and enough natural gas to meet the nation's household needs for 60 years. It's an incredible story that I think goes untold, Don Evans, who serves as partnership chairman, told the Reporter-Telegram by telephone. Few people understand the role we play in economic security, energy security, and in the national security of the United States. The former Secretary of Commerce during President George W. Bush's first term said the partnership is serving as a trusted voice, promoting investment in the Permian while also serving as a voice for the broader Permian Basin. For any industry or any institution or organization, what's important is having a trusted voice. We represent that trusted voice for the energy industry and the Permian Basin. While the New Mexico portion of the Permian contains only 6% of the state's population, and the West Texas portion of the Permian Basin is 2% of Texas' population, the region is responsible for 18% of New Mexico's gross domestic product and 11% of the Texas GDP. To realize the Permian's potential, Evans said investment in the region's schools, housing, and infrastructure, like roads and broadband, is needed. The report said $1 billion invested in local roads would prevent more than 4,000 traffic accidents and almost 200 fatalities. We want to highlight this story, and in highlighting this story, attract outside resources to help develop our infrastructure to let us develop this potential. It's a remarkable story, he said, given that around the end of 2008, the Permian Basin was projected to be producing a mere 500,000 barrels a day. We know what happened thanks to the innovation, entrepreneurial, great risk-taking spirit of the industry and citizens in bringing in new technology. The Permian Basin at the end of 2019 was producing 5 million barrels a day. That's unprecedented. He said he likes to tell people that because of the innovative, risk-taking spirit of Permian Basin producers in adapting new technology and new techniques, the price of oil was driven down from $100 a barrel to $50 a barrel, and natural gas from $10,000 per MCF to $2 per MCF. That's like a $500 billion tax cut. Instead of $4 per gallon gasoline, consumers are paying $2 a gallon. That's an incredible stimulus to the U.S. economy and globally. It's like a $2 trillion tax cut. And the exciting thing is there's a lot more to come. Although the industry and region are going through hard times because of the novel coronavirus COVID-19 pandemic and low commodity prices, he believes the region will make it through those hard times and grow again. The future has never been brighter, and all credit goes to the industry and the citizens of the Permian Basin. The patriotic spirit, the hardworking spirit of the Permian Basin makes it all possible. Local and state news. Miss Casey's opens for Wonderland Experience by J.C. Lewis, jacy.lewis@hurstnp.com. Miss Casey's Wonderland was filled with customers on Thursday, the first day it opened, with new stock for the holiday season. This is the store's 36th year, and sister co-owners Becky McCraney and Kathy Harrison are excited to provide some normalcy during this time. The last couple of years, we've stayed open year-round with limited shopping hours to do the other seasons, but we are really well-known for our Halloween, fall, and holiday decor. We closed pretty much the month of August so that we could reset the store with what all is seen. The store is showcasing about 30 vignettes through its 16,000 square feet. Harrison said she attributes the turnout Thursday to the weather, which feels like fall, and that the store is a place that brings happiness to people. I think the weather is probably a big help because it feels like fall, she said. Also, I think that with all that's been going on during this challenging year, this was somewhere people would come and feel happy and a little bit back to normal. The store is mask preferred, but doesn't require masks in case people have a health problem that keeps them from wearing one. The store has a lot of unique offerings for the holiday season. All the vignettes that we do are new with new products, she said. I think a lot of people have come to realize that we don't have a lot of depth. I mean, we do on some things like ribbon and trees are staple items. If they see something, they should get it right then. Not much has changed besides masks and social distancing. Harrison said the store is continuing to serve warm cookies that now come in a bag with a drink. She hopes the people will come out and enjoy shopping while getting a little bit back to normal. Midland men in custody for oil theft scheme, from staff reports. Two Midland men are in custody and face federal charges for a scheme to steal oil in the Andrews County area and transport it to various disposal locations, including one in New Mexico, announced U.S. Attorney John F. Bash and FBI Special Agent in Charge Luis Quesada. Federal authorities reported Friday that they filed a criminal complaint in Midland this week, charging 36-year-old Juan Carlos and 30-year-old Jose Leonardo Rodriguez Angeles. If convicted, the defendants face up to 10 years in federal prison. For theft of an interstate shipment and interstate transportation of stolen property, and up to 5 years in federal prison for the conspiracy charge. The complaint charges the defendants with one count of conspiracy, one count of theft of an interstate shipment, and one count of transportation of stolen property. The complaint also alleges that on May 28, the defendants stole more than 500 barrels of oil from at least three production lease locations around Andrews and transported the stolen oil across state lines into New Mexico, where it was disposed of at a location near Eunice. The complaint further alleges that on September 3rd, the defendants were responsible for stealing in excess of 100 additional barrels of oil from various production lease locations around Andrews and taking it to a disposal location in Odessa. During the early morning hours of September 4th, state authorities stopped the defendants following their return to Andrews County and arrested them while attempting to steal oil again from a previous victim company. The FBI's Permian Basin Oil Field Theft Task Force is investigating this case. It is important to note that a criminal complaint is merely a charge and should not be considered as evidence of guilt. The defendants are presumed innocent until proven guilty in a court of law. Boardings creep up in August by Stuart Doreen, S-D-O-R-E-E-N at HearstNP.com. The recovery at Midland International Airport slowed in August. While the percentage decrease dropped for the fourth straight month, there wasn't much to show for it in August. In July, boardings were 62% lower year over year. In August, the decline was 58%. And while airport officials showed consecutive 80-plus percent declines in April and May, they saw a month of August that again confirmed how slow the recovery will be. With 1 month left in the fiscal year, the number of passengers in fiscal year 2019/20 was 37% lower than fiscal year 18/19. Fuel sales declined by 52%. That was about the same as July and much better than the 77% decline in April. Still, year-to-date, the 4,457 million gallons this fiscal year is a 21% decline year-over-year. It was the same story for parking revenues, which fell by 51% in August. Again, that was marginally better than the 54% decline in July and vastly improved from 77% decline in April. However, fuel sales are down 33% this fiscal year. County sales tax drop tops 51% from staff reports. September was a wretched month for tax sales tax collection in Midland County. The Texas Comptroller's Office, on its website, reported this past week that the county's sales tax collection dropped by 52% year over year in September. The decline was nearly $3 million and continued the heavy losses the county is taking over the past few months. In August, the county suffered a 41% decline. In June and July, the declines were 33%. September's collection is based on sales in July. The city of Midland reported a drop in September was its worst of the year, 37%. Year-to-date, the drop in the county has been 23% compared to last year. The $37 million collected is more than $11 million off the record pace last year. The city ended its fiscal year 14% lower than fiscal year 2019. The county has 2 months left in its fiscal year.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.